Hello, and welcome to another episode of GDPR Now, a podcast dedicated to all things related to data privacy and data security, brought to you by Data Protection for Business, and this is DPO. Your host today is me, Karen Heaton, owner of Data Protection for Business, recording from my home office in Southwest London. Today we depart from the coronavirus-related stories to bring you an update on the European Court of Justice landmark ruling on the adequacy of the Privacy Shield. And so across the airwaves, we are delighted to have Mark Sherwood-Edwards, a fellow GDPR Now host, lawyer and data protection specialist. Mark has taken the time to read the judgment in detail and is going to talk to us today about what it means for data protection, for businesses and for DPOs. So we're splitting the podcast into two sections. In the first 15 minutes, Mark will explain in a nutshell what the decision was, together with some suggestions for what we should do next. For the second part of the podcast, we will go into more detail about the decision itself, what it was based on, and what we think might happen next in the world of data regulators, supervisory authorities, and their interaction with national security agencies. So, Mark, welcome. It's great to have you back with us. Would you like to reintroduce yourself to the listeners, please?
Yeah, it's great to be back. I hosted a number of these shows back in the day. Yeah, it's good to be back. So my name is Mark Sherwood-Edwards from This Is DPO. If you want to check out my website, it's thisisdpo.co.uk. And we're going to be talking about Schrems 2, which is the case that Karen mentioned, one of those big landmark cases which comes out every couple of years.
And it's sort of taken the data protection world by storm, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we're both in Southwest London, which, is, as we know, is the epicenter of privacy and data protection.
Of course it is.
Throughout the world.
It certainly is today on this podcast. So, Mark, can you give us your best summary of the decision itself, please?
Okay, so I'm going to talk about this in kind of two and a half parts, probably. One, the decision, in absolute simplest, just to remind everybody who's already heard it, or just to update those who haven't had time to catch up with it. Then this bit's quite important, why the European Court of Justice reached the decision, because that has implications for a lot of other things. And then thirdly, what that means in practice for DPOs, for businesses and so on. Okay, so kicking off with the decision itself, the first decision is the Privacy Shield is no longer valid. So the Privacy Shield, which is effectively an adequacy decision between European Union and the US with some kind of mechanism to make it work more effectively, is no longer valid. Second decision, standard contractual clauses, SECs, are still valid, but they have to be used in a slightly different way than they were before. Before, you could just sign the SECs and you thought you were done, and that's not enough anymore. The combination of the SECs plus the underlying legal regime in the importer's country is what determines whether you've met the standard or not. We'll come back to the standard a bit later.
Okay.
So it's just not SECs on their own. It's SECs taking into account what's happening in the importing country. And if you need to do more, if you need to add supplementary measures, you need to add supplementary measures.
Okay. So just to remind everybody then that if you're sending data from the EU to somewhere like the US, you as the controller or processor are the exporter of that data, and the recipient country in that sense is the receiver of that data.
Yeah, it's the importer, recipient and importer, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the third thing is the supervisory authorities have an obligation. They don't have a discretion. They have an obligation to suspend data transfers to any countries where they feel the data is being transferred over in a situation where there is not equivalent protection. So if it's SECs on their own and they're not sufficient, then the local supervisory authority has an obligation to stop that data transfer. It's a mandatory obligation. Once they've decided that there's a breach, they have to stop it.
Okay, and I noticed that the ICO in the UK made a brief statement on their website in the last few days saying that they're going to provide additional guidance and they're going to work with UK businesses to help them through the ramifications of this judgment.
Okay, well, for UK businesses, the I guess the good news is you're no longer part of the European Union, just about, so you don't really care. There's no direct impact on UK businesses. Mm-hmm. But the privacy shield could carry on fine between the UK and the US, and that's what might happen.
Yeah,
I was going to talk about it later, talk about it now, but the UK is seeking an adequacy decision from the European Union going forward, and it may be this will have an impact on that because...
On that decision.
The US and the UK share quite a lot of intelligence gathering data, and this is essentially what all this is about. So 3 points. Privacy shield no longer valid. SECs are valid, but supervisory authorities have a lengthy obligation to suspend any dev chancellors in breach. And fourthly, what goes to SECs also goes to binding corporate rules, okay? BCRs, SECs, It's the same thing. It's not called out explicitly in the Schrems II judgment, but the logic is so inevitable, you have to take that as read. And in fact, a lot of the commentators have thought that BCRs are not impacted, but that's not correct.
Okay. I mean, BCRs, just to remind people, are binding corporate rules, are usually put in place by large global organisations. It's quite a complex mechanism. It requires authority and approval of those rules and regulations they've got in place within groups and between certain other groups.
Yeah, correct. Right, so that is that enough on the decision? And then I'll go on to why the decision was reached. So the reasoning behind why the decision is reached is quite important, but it's not particularly complicated. Mm-hmm. What the Court of Justice said, and it's all set out in Chapter 5 of the GDPR. No one ever looks at chapter headings particularly, but it's the one that deals with data transfers. And Chapter 5, and it's Article 44, says, transfers are okay, but they must ensure, and I'm quoting from the end of Article 44, must ensure that the level of protection of natural persons guaranteed by this regulation is not undermined. Mm-hmm. So the level of protection is not undermined. So you're okay to export, but once it's left the territory, that level of protection must be available to those data subjects who are in that data that's been exported. And that's a kind of fundamental part. So mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're doing BCRs, it doesn't matter if you're doing binding corporate rules, it doesn't matter if you're doing standard contractual clauses, the end result is that the end result must be is that they have the same level of protection, now the data's in the imported country that to this same as they had in the EU, okay? And there's this phrase that kicks around the judgment, it's a very ugly phrase, essentially equivalent, but means equivalent in all important parts, right?
So do you think something has changed for this decision to be made? So for this particular stipulation of the same level of protection?
No, I don't think anything's changed. I think it's a reflection of the way the legal mechanism works. Remember, a court, particularly a court like the European Court of Justice, which is an appeal court, which doesn't decide on facts, decides purely on law, does not have the authority to pursue things itself. It can't go and explore stuff, right? People have to apply to it. People have to start a legal action, and then it can form a view. If you hold that thought, I'll come back to it.
Okay.
And the problem in this instance was that the US authorities treat people very differently. And they basically divide that into two classes. On one hand, first class, there is US nationals and people residing in the US. And then there is everybody else, to be blunt. So everybody else would be European residents residing or people residing in the EU whose data gets exported. Now, the first group of people, US nationals and people residing in the US, get the full benefit of the law. But the people who are not residing in the US don't get the full benefit of the law and, in fact, are subject to bulk collection by the US intelligence agencies. So when you ship over the export data to the S and ends up with Microsoft or Google or anybody else, they have the authority to go in, the intelligence agencies have authority to go in secretly, well, don't tell anybody, they can tell Microsoft what the data about these people, and Microsoft or whoever it is has to hand that data over and can't tell, they can't tell you that your data's been handed over. That's one part of it. And the second part, that's the known as FISA, Foreign Intelligence Service Act. Mm-hmm. That comes under that. And then there's another one, which is Executive Order 12333, which allows, I think it's just the NSA, but who knows, to all this data arise by underwater cable. It allows them to tap into the underwater cable and pull out whatever data they want. Okay. And that's the background. And what the ECJ has said is, well, yeah, we understand that countries have got national security obligations. We're happy with that. That's fine. That is not a carte blanche to do whatever you want. That's got to be circumscribed. It's got to be proportionate. And if you look at, in fact, GDPR Article 23, yep. It allows, provides specifically for national security agencies to pull off data, but put some limits around it. It's got to be necessary. It's got to be proportionate. You've got to be clear about how long you can hold the data, all that kind of stuff. But this, in the US, it doesn't apply. And the second thing is, for it to have to be equivalent, you've got to have rights you can enforce against the state authority. So in the UK, for example, or in France, if I thought my data was being taken by the National Security Agency, I could go to court and challenge it. I might win, I might lose, but I could go to court. And in this particular instance, you can't do that in the States. Now, for the Privacy Shield stuff, which covers the FISA stuff, there is an ombudsman put in place by the USA, but the ombudsman reports to the Secretary of State, and therefore it's not independent, and also has no sanctioning ability against the intelligence agencies. Therefore, has no real teeth. Okay, so it's not an enforceable right. So that is the essential thing. That if we're talking about equivalent regime, you've got to be able to challenge. And if you find out about it, but you could go to court and say, well, I'm sorry, I don't believe the MI5 or the CIA or whoever it is has the right to do this. My data. And you can't do that if you're an EU resident. And that essentially is the point.
So you can't do that if you're an EU resident or any other resident that is.
Or any other resident. The only people who can do that are people who are US nationals or people living in the US. So we come back to that first point. Is this suddenly new? Well, actually, it's kind of the point that's made in Schrems 1 in a slightly different guise, but it's there. This whole Schrems 2 litigation was kicked off by another complaint by Max Schrems, and the Irish Data Commissioner came to the same conclusion in 2016, said, looks like this is not compatible with the GDPR or the prevailing legislation. It went to the Irish High Court, who said, yeah, we looked at it, and they had submissions from the American government, from everybody. And they looked at it, they said, yeah, we agree, we don't think it's compatible with GDPR. It was been brought up in the European Data Protection Board regulations. They have said, in the annual report or whatever it is, and maybe the Working Party 29 before that, said, actually, we've got doubts about whether the Privacy Shield is compatible with this legislation in the US. So actually, everyone's actually very surprised. But with the benefit of hindsight, you can see that actually these issues had been circulated a long time before and were actually addressed in the Privacy Shield by the European Commission, who then said, actually, we think they've been sufficiently dealt with by our protective measures and the European Court of Justice.
But they didn't go back to the ECJ at that point, did they, the European
Commission? No, because the ECJ, remember, the ECJ can't do the stuff of its own volition. Someone has to raise the issue.
But they chose not to raise it with the ECJ, I presume.
Well, the commission is executive. Think of the commission as executive. The ECJ has a legislative function. You know, someone has, it's the way these kind of things work. Someone has to challenge the government by going to court. In this instance, the commission is effectively the government. And Max Schrems challenged them by going to court, and said, what you're doing, what you're allowing Facebook to do, because it's about the Facebook transfer of Facebook data from Ireland to the US, is not lawful.
There must be other countries in the world where EU citizens don't have similar rights to go and find out what the security services of various national governments are collecting.
Yeah, absolutely. So this will apply. Okay, so this will apply to places like Russia, like China, and so on. But it's what's more. We talked about what the decision is. Why DCJ reached that decision. Mm-hmm. It's now probably worth talking. Useful to talk about what that means in practice, and that. Yeah. That point you're making will come out of that this particular discussion. So the first thing is, if you're in the UK, you don't have to do anything about it, at least just yet, okay? Because the UK, right or wrongly, is no longer in the European Union. If you are in the European Union and you are exporting data to somewhere else other than the US, then frankly, do nothing is the best thing at the moment. Right, because this is absolutely huge and no one knows quite what to do about it.
Or where it's going to go and what's going to mean.
Where it's going to go, okay. Now, what is clear is technically there's no moratorium. It's not like it's incoming legislation, you know, 2 years ahead it's going to arrive. This, in theory, is binding now. Yeah. In practice, and hold that thought, I can't see the regulators being really hardline straight away because everyone's slightly state of shell shock as to what to do. So what the ECJ says at the end of his judgment, so we've now cancelled the privacy shield, we've now set new rules for SEC. Doesn't that leave a legal vacuum? And he says, no, it doesn't leave a legal vacuum, because if you look at Article 49 of GDPR, it's got these derogations, these exceptions where you don't actually need adequacy decision BCRs or SECs, okay? Now, personally, I'm not convinced that that's going to work because they're so tightly circumscribed. If people are interested, there's a European Data Protection Board paper on Article 25 derogations. But historically, they've been very tightly, at least for EDP's, European EDPB's view, is that it should be tightly construed. If suddenly they're going to change their mind and say, oh no, it should be liberally construed, I'd be pretty surprised. But with the European Data Protection Board is supposed to be putting out some guidelines, or some frequently asked questions, I understand, pretty soon. So if you're one of those, if you're exporting from the EU, a state country that's not the USA, I'll just wait and see for the time being. Explore Article 49 if you're interested in it, but wait and see what the rest of the world and the regulators are going to do. This is a time to hide in the herd. don't panic, hide in the herd. Keep your head down. Slightly different, of course, if you're in the EU and exporting to the US, okay, and you're using the privacy shield. So if you're one of those, I would put in place SECs between you and your importer in the US, and then, again, hide in the herd, wait and see, just don't panic. Now, there's no way I can see that the data flow between the European and US are going to be stopped dead. Because it's just too huge, right? It's so damaging to everyone. So that's not going to happen. No one quite knows what is going to happen, but that certainly won't happen. But put in place SECs. And if you are the US company, you probably have to resign from the SEC, from the privacy shield, or there's some cancellation letter, except if you are getting data from the UK, you might want to hang around in there anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's those.
So they're unlikely to stop the data transfers and their tracks for obvious reasons.
But there's two other things to bear in mind, right? At least two other things to bear in mind. My understanding is some of the local supervisor authorities have already said you can't transfer any more data to the US. I understand the Germans, I'm going to check, the Germans have said this very hard. Well, there's loads of data protection authorities in Germany because there's one for each province and then the federal. But at least some of them have been saying you can't do any more transfers.
Okay.
If that's the correct case, I'm not sure what you quite do at this moment. The other thing to worry about is if you are actually in breach, so, and if you are transferring data to the US at the moment under either an SEC or a Privacy Shield, you're more than likely to be, you're more or less certainly in breach. Mm-hmm. You can be sued by data subjects for compensation for any damages they suffered, because you are technically in breach by allowing that data transfer to continue.
But obviously, they have to have some sort of some reason why they think their data may have been leaked, and some evidence.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if it's necessary for it to have been leaked. Who knows? I mean, it's enough. That's a really good point. Okay, but it's if you look at the latest Google Lloyd Google action in the UK, it was suggesting that you don't actually have to suffer any damage. The mere fact that your rights have been infringed gives right to a claim and compensation. Now, the UK has got more advanced class actions, more developed than the rest of Europe. Yes. So it might be harder to work in the rest of Europe.
Yeah, we had Kingsley Hayes came on and talked about that with us.
There you go. Group okay. actions.
And the that's still going through the courts, that one.
Yeah.
Google. He's going to come and on that, and talk about it when it pops out the other side.
Yeah, exactly. But the it's that a state of flux. It's a state of flux. But where it was heading at that point was you didn't have to show damage. You just had to have your rights infringed.
Yeah.
Now, whether your rights officially infringed by the fact that the CIA may have copied your data, or the CIA actually did copy your data, which you would never know anyway, is hard to tell. The real problem, okay, so this is still what means in practice, and this is why everyone's waiting and seeing, is previously we all thought you put the SECs in place or the BCRs in place and you're done. That's all you need to do. But European Court of Justice says no. You've got to, well, that might be okay, but the point is what you've got to do is reach an end state where the data subject has got equivalent protection in the importing country. Now, in some countries, just SECs may be sufficient. In other countries, you may have to adopt supplementary measures on top of the SECs. Now, that's an impossible burden, right, on, you know, any medium-sized company.
But also, how hard would it be to influence national security organizations?
Okay, so there's two things. One is you have to make an assessment, right, of what the, I don't know, let's say exporting to Ecuador. If there's anybody from Ecuador listening, hello, it's not picking you in particular. I like Ecuador, it's a great country.
I've been there, it's great.
If the Ecuador, you make an assessment of the data protection regime in Ecuador, right? Now, how can you do that if you're a small company or even a medium-sized company in France, Spain or Germany or Lithuania? We can do it. It's astonishingly expensive. And then if you conclude that actually, like the US, problem is with the state agencies, well, actually, there's nothing you can do about it. So it's just this is why so everyone's kind of a bit lost, because you can see exactly the European Court of Justice's point. Right, they're absolutely right. You can't, if you're having equivalent protection, you can't ship it around to countries which just don't, where the state, which has to be controlled just like any other player in society. And that's what having a rule of law means, where the state can do whatever they want. So it's pretty, that's why everyone's a bit at sea.
But equally, I suppose if you look at it from the other point of view, it depending how it plays out, but as it stands at the moment, large companies need to have offices in EU countries or other equivalent or adequate from an EU GDPR perspective, so that there isn't this big friction between what are the national actors doing with my data.
Well, exactly. So what you could do is that rather than you could, let's say you're a big American company, you could say, right, and to avoid this problem, I'm going to have my data center. For European people, I have my data center in Europe somewhere, yeah, okay?
It's not just the data center.
Well, okay, and that's where the problem starts, right? It's not just the data center. The people accessing it, if you want to take a strict reading of GDPR, have to be in Europe. You can't have it accessed from countries outside Europe.
But even on top of that, if you're an American company with an office in the EU, what's to stop the security people coming and saying, right, we want to see the data.
Exactly. Well, exactly. So you have this very interesting situation where if you're an American company and you set up your data center in the European Union, then that data is now subject to GDPR, yeah, right? It's being processed in the European Union, clearly subject to GDPR. So tick there. Okay. There's a slight problem, or major problems when you look at it, that actually the CIA can get access to it anyway. But in a sense, at that point, you've given it equivalence, right? You might have had that problem with the German CIA if they've got one, you know, or the Lithuanian CIA if they've got one. But, you know, at least you're within the confines. Now, and this is there's an important thing that bear in mind, which is, you know, there's been various webinars about this recently, and a lot of people seem to get this wrong. People thought BCRs were covered by, affected by SREMS too, they clearly are. Another one seems to be that this is unfair on the US in that we haven't compared, you know, member state legal provisions against the US's and so on. Therefore, actually, maybe much more similar than appears. Now, it's worth bearing in mind that if you're a European company and you export and you import data to Europe from Americans, so let's say you're the reverse of Amazon, you're the reverse of Google, they just kind of European. As soon as that data is in Europe, it's subject to GDPR. Yeah. The American citizens have standing and can sue in the relevant member state, have their rights protected. And if it was being accessed by French Secret Service, German Secret Service, Spanish Secret Service, could go to court as Americans and have that challenged. That is a fundamental difference. The other interesting thing is that the ECJ decision was referred by the Irish High Court, and the Irish High Court said, well, are we supposed to, what's a comparator for equivalence? Is it the GDPR or is it each individual member state law? And the answer clearly is a GDPR, because if it was, you know, that's what applies throughout the
member states,
European Union. Yeah, and if you weren't doing it piece by piece, you'd be there forever. But it comes back to the point I was saying before. It is, if people want to challenge the how member states behaves in terms of their data, they're free to do so. Legally, they can do that. So if Max Schrems, who's Austrian, wants to challenge how the Austrians handle his data,
he can do that.
He can do that. If somebody Lithuanian wants to do it, they can do it, right? Just start legal proceedings. So, you know, that is a difference. Whereas, you know, if you're a European, if you're a European resident, you don't have any locus standi. You have no standing in America. There's nothing you can do about it. So big, fundamental, big difference.
So as you said previously, where does that leave businesses? So, you know, the UK companies, not particularly affected necessarily at this point.
As yet. It may ripple out and hit them. But not yet. I think if you're a business in the European Union, or actually a business, if you're a business in the European Union and you're a business anywhere in the world, frankly, including the US, you're in a wait and see mode, except if you're a US company that's been using the Privacy Shield, it would be sensible to sign up to the SECs, because we know that they are valid, at least in theory anyway. We know we can't fix the present problem about Pfizer interference and, you know, access to the underwater cables by the CIA or whoever it is. We know we can't fix that, but at least you'd have something which at least prima facie, as I always like to say, it works, SECs and BCRs.
Yeah, that's if you're an American company.
That's if you're an American company. Anybody else, just wait. But, you know, don't panic. Hide in the herd. Watch the news. You know, watch the data protection news. It's going to iterate and something will come out. And frankly, the Americans will be the main thing is that the Americans hold most of the IT infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. That's why it's an issue. You know, there's not that much data flowing to other countries in the world, I suspect.
Well, there wouldn't be as much as there is flowing into the US. But I mean, I have seen quite a lot of distribution of that data into the EU over the last few years. Quite a few companies we've spoken to have set up the data center, their data centers here.
Well, if you've got your data center here, then it's subject to GDPR.
Yeah.
You know, and then we just have a problem that, you know, spies may be looking at it, but, you know, that's a kind of unofficial problem rather than an official problem, if I could put it that way.
Yeah, that this is now thrown up. This is now an official problem, as you were saying. Okay. Well, that is absolutely fascinating and also a bit scary, as these conversations often are.
Yeah, Evan's becoming a mini expert on American spy law. And of course, yeah, I'm not an expert on American spy law.
We've gone from being experts on viruses to... But, I mean, the last time the European Commission, you know, got together with the Americans and they came up with a solution. So, I mean, it feels to me like that will happen again, unless this is part of a wider trade conversation.
Yeah, I think it's going to be trickier this time, to be blunt. I mean, you can read the ECJ judgment as a real slap in the face of the Commission. What the ECJ is saying to the Commission is, this is a standard you should have adopted, but you failed.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite clear you failed. You sold EU citizens down the river. You said it was adequate. Clearly, it wasn't adequate. So, and it's, some of the stuff might be fixable. For example, there's a fundamental problem in the Americans have got, I think it's Article 4 of the Constitution. American listeners will know this backwards or be correct me mentally, which essentially is equivalent to, you know, right to enjoy a private life, you know, in the European Charter, that kind of thing. And that's been interpreted as applying only to US nationals and only to people, non-nationals who reside in the US, which means that no one in if you don't fit in that country, we've got no locus standi in the US and you can't bring any actions in the US. Which is, you know, the point is to have an enforceable data protection regime. That means you have to have access to the courts to enforce your rights. If you can't have access to the courts, then how do you enforce your rights?
Now, well, when those articles were written, there was, you know, there were hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And
they didn't envisage, you know, vast quantities of data of nationals other than US nationals. Being shipped into that country.
No, and my cursory reading of that particular article of the Constitution, it doesn't explicitly say that at all either. It's just been interpreted as being that. And it's slightly, you know, it's been used in a number of, without going down this tricky road, a number of foreign policy decisions by the US. So that's one issue. But maybe the ombudsman that set up the privacy shield could be strengthened. One of the European Court of Justice said one of the problems is he can be fired or she can be fired. So how can you be independent when you report into the Secretary of State, the person you're supposed to be regulating, and the Secretary of State can fire you? Mm-hmm. So it's a bit like the DPO, right? So a DPO can't be fired for maybe five other things, but not for bad DPO behaviour. So maybe if you could have that bit more regulated, that would fix it. Then you've got the problem with the Executive Order 12333, which is, I think NSA has direct access to underwater cables, which is no review element there. And maybe if everybody just encrypted it, that would be sufficiently difficult for the end-to-end. You know, that's been discussed, right? But you can't think with NSA, really. I mean, they've got huge Cray computers. I know encryption is hard to crack, but who knows?
Well, it's expensive, you know, to build hard-to-crack encryption. It's not cheap.
Well, it's cheap. It's not exactly. It's expensive. It slows down the processing time. And, you know, if you're going to be a purist, it's still personal data, encrypted, not encrypted, right? Mm. It doesn't change the nature of what's going on. So,
But given what's going on in the US at the moment, you know, they've got the elections coming up. I mean, how much time is there going to be available to make these changes?
They've got COVID, as every all in various forms. Good point. I honestly don't know. Everyone's looking for a sticking plaster that'll just get us to where we have a bit more time.
That's a very familiar regime for fixing things around here.
Yeah.
Get the sticking plasters out. Well, it's something to give us food for thought significantly, Mark. Thank you very much for going to the time to read all those and sharing your understanding of it with us. I certainly feel more enlightened having listened to you than having read it myself. So I personally thank you very much.
No, pleasure. I think the next thing that people should watch out for, apart from, read your normal sources, whatever they are, is the European Data Protection Board is publishing guidelines or weekly asked questions or something shortly. And that might be helpful.
Maybe we can do a quick show on that as well.
Yeah.
If you've got time. Thank you. That's excellent.
Not sure.
So, unfortunately, that brings us to the end of this podcast. So, Mark, thank you again for taking the time to come on today and give us your thoughts and explain the background to this groundbreaking decision. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our readers apart from keep a lookout to your main information sources?
No, I think I've spilled all the beans I've got.
The beans have been spilled. Thank you. We've got Mark's contact details up in the show notes if you want to contact him directly and get some more specific advice. So he's obviously a qualified lawyer and he can help you through that. So suffice to say, that's it from me, Karen Heaton. Thank you very much for listening. And we hope to catch up with you again in our next episode. So until then, take care and stay safe.